Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text number 2 from Canto 5, Chapter 12. This is King Rahugana speaking.
Jvara masyarthasya yatagadam sat.
Vidagha dhagdhasya yatahimambaha.
Kudeha manahi vadashta drishtahe.
Brahman vachaste mrita aushadhamme.
Jvaramayartasya yatagadam sat.
Nidagha dhagdhasya yata himambaha.
Kudeha manahi vadashta drishtahe.
Raman vachaste mrita aushadhamme.
Jvara of a fever.
Amaya,
by the disease.
Artasya,
of a distressed person.
Yata,
just as.
Agadam,
the medicine.
Sat,
right.
Nidagha, dagdhasya.
Of one scorched by the heat of the sun.
Yatha,
just as.
Hima ambaha,
very cold water.
Kudeha,
in this body made of matter and full of dirty things, such as stool and urine.
Mana,
of pride.
Ahi,
by the serpent.
Vidashta,
bitten.
Drishtahe,
of one whose vision.
Brahman,
oh, best of the Brahmanas.
Vachaha,
words.
Te,
your.
Amritam,
nectar.
Oshadham,
medicine.
May,
for me. Translation, oh, best of the Brahmanas, my body is filled with dirty things, and my vision has been bitten by the serpent of pride. Due to my mature conceptions, I am diseased. Your nectarian instructions are the proper medicine for one suffering from such a fever, and there are cooling waters for one scorched by the heat. Report by Srila Prabhupada. The conditioned soul has a body full of dirty things. Dash. Bones, blood, urine, stool, and so forth. Nonetheless, the most intelligent men in this material world think they are these combinations of blood, bones, urine, and stool. If this is so, why can't other intelligent men be made with these ingredients, which are so readily available? The entire world is going on under the bodily conception and creating a hellish condition unfit for any gentleman's living. The instructions given to Rahugana by Jadbharata are very valuable. They are like the medicine that can save one from a snake bite. The Vedic instructions are like nectar and cool water for one suffering from scorching heat. Well, we heard in the chapter summary that Judd Bart is being asked to repeat what he said earlier for the parts of what he said first time around the king couldn't understand. And two things are repeated. You're not qualified to be a leader. You're not a learned person. Because of the pride, the bodily conception, and all these things. You're not doing your duty as the king or leader. You're mistaken the body to be the self. You're full. And you're pretending to be both a learned person and a leader. So, those are harsh things to hear, I suppose, except that we've just recalled that Judd Bard hasn't said anything his whole life to anybody. And now he's saying something. So he must see something in Vrhugana, although he's like letting him have it, that indicates he's a qualified person. He's worth breaking his silence and speaking to. Because he's interested in uplifting. I mean, without all the other history, his life was threatened. He was going to be chopped up in human sacrifice. He didn't say anything. He didn't do anything. But even in the face of the threat of life, fear of loss of life, he said nothing. Now he's saying something. The point I'm making is Rahugna is a special person, although he has disqualification in, you know, significant ways that both the previous chapter and this chapter are going to point out significant shortcomings. But he's a fit recipient for transcendental knowledge, and one of the indications is after hearing he's very humbled. He's it's very similar to what we're going to hear this evening in the prayers of Prahlad. The first symptom or sign or qualification of one who's spiritually qualified is humility. And not, you know, humility in terms of trembling and cowering at off in a corner. Not that. But humble in the sense of before recognizing the importance of hearing and recognizing I'm not all great and I need calling out for help from a qualified person, in this case, Judd Bharat. And then acting from that position to the other. God is great, I'm very tiny. I need his mercy. Doesn't mean we become lazy or complacent or fearful. I need his mercy. Humility is the first item. And he has it. He's speaking it. And he's giving his reasons, not just, you know, trembling. He's giving his reasons why he's been humbled. So he points to pride. In the third line. Mana ahi vidashta. Mana ahi vidashta. Mana, excuse me. Mana. Ahi is a serpent. Sarpa is other terms, but here it's ahi. And vidashta, bitten. Bitten by the serpent of pride. Mana. Like amanina manadena, amanina manadena. Mana is without pride. And person without pride is offering all respects to others. That's how Prabhupada has translated it. Amanina. But mana is the opposite. I don't offer respects to others. I'm proud. And then there can be the behavior of offering respects to others when you don't really mean it. It's another thing. But so he's attributing this quality to himself, that he's been bitten by the serpent of pride. So that's not a compliment to oneself. It's part of the material disqualification. One of the themes of the prayers of Prahlad, because I've spoken it so many times. There's no material qualification. And there's no material disqualification. If you have these many bad marks, you can't enter into the house of bhakti. You have to stay outside. He has disqualification. And he's knowing it. And it was demonstrated how he behaved with Judd Barrett before Judd Barrett spoke. And Judd Barrett informed him, "You're Maya." Anyway, statements of disqualification. It's something like if somebody says, "Gee, Prabhu, I'm sorry." You know, I'm curious sometimes when people say that, what is it that you're sorry for? Maybe, you know, they're sorry for something other than the transgression itself. Anyway, he's clear what he's what his disqualification is. Bitten by the serpent of pride. And the word just before that is ku. Deha. Deha means body. And ku deha means bad body, or body filled with dirty things, kudeha. And something that, kind of one of Prabhupada's pet expressions, so not always, but often takes the opportunity when the opportunity is provided, blood, bone, stool, and urine. Feel like liquid beauty. Everybody knows the skit. So what's beauty? Vomit and anyway, stool, urine, smelly things in a nice package. But that's what the body is. And so kudeha, here I am, it's embarrassing, but I'm acknowledging this embarrassment. Not so before he wasn't acknowledging, he was ignoring and acting out of pride. So now he's acknowledging. I'm in this embarrassing situation with this bad body. Not king's body, beauty body, and, you know, power body. And so, it's not, it's not a matter of self-deprecation, because people that are clinically disturbed can do that. But it's from the point of knowledge. And again, because Prabhupada likes to do this, you say chemical evolution, here's the chemicals. Life comes from chemicals. He was very proud of Swarup Damodar, who as a PhD attended some big conference, big fellow, big audience, chemical evolution expert. And after this big talk, he was one of the questioners, if I gave you the elements, can you create life? No. So we give you the what the body is made up of, make life, is by that's what the so yet they're thinking that's all there is. That's you know, that's the ignorance. And so ignorance brings the kudeha. Ignorance brings this mana ahi vidashta. And as a result, drishte, his vision, is spoiled. Material conceptions. Conceptions are carried in the mind, Krishna says. Like air carries aroma. Conceptions of life. Conceptions of life. And misconceptions, it's a nice term that we know in ISKCON very well, is upadi. And bhakti is without upadis. There's other applications of the term upadi, but we're accustomed to that one. Sarva upadi vinir muktam tat paratvin and nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam. That's the definition. One of the principal definitions of bhakti is without upadis. But he's acknowledging, he's intelligent, he is learned, and he knows what his disqualification is. He knows the advantage that he's getting through the association of Jad Bharat also. But his conceptions of life carried in the mind have polluted his vision. Can't see straight. He can see, but he can't see straight. And then can't act properly. So these are some of my disqualifications. Now the good news is, notably in the verse, the word for medicine is here twice in the verse, word for word. Oshadha. Oshadha. Oshadham. Amritam Oshadham. Your words, vacha, are Oshadha. Our medicine and amrita, nectar medicine. Although he's saying harsh, you know, heavy things, you could say harsh things, it's amrita. Because he knows Jad Bharat isn't like heavy him out so he can get him to do something he wants, or get him to not do something he wants, or get him get something. It's his compassion, because previously he was behaving in a way that he was hiding his identity. Now he's not hiding his identity. He's disclosing his identity through his speech. And that speech is amrita. Although it's in one sense painful to hear when false ego gets smashed, there's some false ego pain. But at a deeper level, there's a spiritual freedom, relief from the burdensome false ego. So, this another one of Prabhupada's favorite verses in the Bhagavatam is where this word Aushadha also appears. And I'm going to refer to it. It's Canto 10, Chapter 1. This is after hearing everything, and the Sutta, Maharaj Prakshit is saying to Shukadeva Goswami, describe the pastimes of Krishna, and describe the pastimes of Krishna because it's bhavoshada, bhava, oshada. Bhava is different than bhava. Bhava is ecstasy, and bhava is material disease. So bhava, oshada. Your words, Shukadeva Goswami, are the right medicine. So the verse starts, Nivrita Tayashar Upagiya Manad. Upagiya Manad. Upagiya Manad, it's sung. Upagiya Manad. And it gives release, Nivrita, from Tyreshire, lust or lusty activities or material existence or material activities, Nivritta Tyreshire, Gupagiya Manad. When your words are like songs, and your songs are like nectar and medicine for the material disease. Pavoshada Shrotra Mano Viramat. Mana, the mind becomes pleased. Abhiramat. Abhiramat is Abhiram. The mind becomes filled with pleasure from the glorifications or the sound vibration, from this medicine. Oshada, Pava Oshada. So not only the disease becomes mitigated and removed, but positively, so there's the negative, what is eliminated, and then there's the positive, which is one feels an unprecedented happiness. So that's what Rahugana is saying also. Ka uttama shloka gunana vadat paman virajeta vina pashugnat. Pashugnat is an animal killer, a butcher, who won't be interested in these things except somebody like that. Ka uttama shloka gunana vadat. The uttama shloka, the personality of Godhead who is glorified by Uttama Shloka, choice poetry. So that verse is specifically appreciating and glorifying Krishna Katha, because he wants a nice big serving of Krishna Katha from the chef. Shukadev. He wants to dish it out. But here, this is preliminary. He hasn't gone to Judd Bard, hasn't gone to topics of Krishna's activities. He's simply speaking about the soul, kind of fundamental Krishna consciousness or transcendental knowledge. But transcendental knowledge is the beginning, because how can you understand Krishna and Krishna's activities, how can you enter into them and have the heart open to receive that sound vibration if the body conception is very strong? And with that, pride. If the mind, as he's saying here, my mind is contaminated by so many material conceptions, I don't have proper vision of myself or what's around me and life and... So that's his humility. And your words, O best of the brahmanas, are like nectar. And they're like nectar medicine. And it's curing my disease. So then, the first part of the verse, it's appreciating the effect, you know, the lifting effect. Jvara means fever. And for someone who has a fever, it's welcome that there's a sprinkling of cold water, cool water, or cold water. So words are like cooling water for someone who has a fever. And for someone that's in a scorching heat of the sun, it brings relief. Your words are bringing relief to my diseased condition. Again, the Sanskrit word for disease, excuse me, medicine, in the first line, yatha agadam. Yatha means like or as. Agadam, like medicine. For a person distressed like me, I mean, I was thinking I was having a good time being the king, but actually that thought of being happy being the king was really miserable. And you've given me relief from that misery, that feverish condition. And then finally, it acts like an antidote to snake bite, poisonous snake bite, because I don't know how they know this, if somebody gets a snake bite, if they have a few seconds to say what it feels like. Or maybe some people can recover from snake bites, but apparently with the poison of a snake bite, the temperature rises when one is in a feverish condition before they expire. So the feverish condition of pride, being bitten by the serpent of pride, is relieving my pride. So he smashed him, and he's going to do it again. But, you know, it's not hurtfully. It's out of love and appreciation to this special person, the king, who's king can be in Maya too. So King Rahugana is in Maya, and he recognizes these characteristics. He's capable of humility, and with that he's capable of receiving transcendental knowledge. He's capable of recognizing, I don't really understand all of what you said, although I recognize it as beneficial. So he has the good sense to ask for clarification. So coming up is clarification questions, and then the rest of the chapter is Jed Bharat giving his response. So it's very valuable. That's why it's in the Bhagavatam, because it's very valuable to take the conditioned soul that's in big time Maya, and how through the association of a saintly person, this case Jed Bharat, is relieved from that big time Maya. And, you know, the progressive, what are some of the essential elements of understanding or realization to get out of Maya, besides saying, gee, that was interesting. But taking to heart the message and moving in the spiritual direction through that good instruction. Bhavo sada shrotra mano viramat nirvittatayar shayar ugiyamanat bhavo sada shrotra mano viramat. It's alliteration, as we discussed yesterday. The Bhagavatam is poetry, transcendental poetry. Any discussion? Yes.
I was thinking how humility, sometimes we hear that means being bold. So I thought if you're in a neophyte stage, how can you traverse the material humility or in any stage, because it seems like an apparent contradiction, humility and then boldness.
Well, you started with this premise that humility means boldness. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, yes, I'll try. I was told that I probably heard it other places too, but what comes to mind is Mahamuni Prabhu told me, Prabhupada mentioned that, humility.
And what was the context?
I don't remember. But he just said humility means being bold for Krishna. Probably because he...
Well, being bold for Krishna, you know, one can be steeped in the mode of passion. And that's not humility. In the name of being bold for Krishna. So, as a transcendental, it's resting upon, humility is resting upon a spiritual conception. So your question is how to go on the other side of the material conception. It's by spiritual conception. Being bold for Krishna, one can be a rascal in the name of being bold for Krishna. So in other words, that's not really what bold for Krishna is. If you're a rascal, you're a rascal. Then the spiritual conception is, rather than being timid, like the material conception of humility, you're not timid. You're bold in the spiritual conception. So that means you can take strong action, but you can also just be, you know, peaceful, chanting the holy name for hours. And that's bold for Krishna too, because that means I'm going against the current of modern society. It's moving very quickly to passionate activity, bold, foolish, passionate activities. So the answer is it requires a spiritual conception, because that's what who we really are, and to act who we really are in a spiritual conception, be bold for Krishna. Okay? Something else.
Guru Maharaj, you mentioned about offering respects to everyone.
So, I'm listening.
What will be the impact by just being neutral, not offering respects externally?
Impersonal.
That hampers the process also.
Huh?
That hampers the process?
Does that help with the process?
Hampers.
Does it hamper?
Sure.
It hampers. You know, anything other than... let's put it this way. It sounds like what you're... I mean, a reverse way of asking your question is, supposing I have this disrespect thing going on, is it better to be neutral than disrespectful?
Kind of, Marsh.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's better to be neutral than disrespectful, but does being neutral, being impersonal, help the process? Not really. I can be, you know, conditioned by that and can't go further because I gotta keep neutral. And then when I'm not neutral, I'm showing, you know, some kindness, affection, appreciation to, you know, some, and then neutral to others. it's similar to dvesha. It's an artificial distinction. Is it better? Maybe. Is it an impediment? Yeah. But is it a step in the direction of, instead of, you know, being inimical, to be neutral? Yeah. Is it an impediment? Yeah.
So my question on that is, okay, now steps are taken not being disrespectful, but at the same time I stand at the neutral. I may not be ready yet to be like fully offering
okay.
respect.
Okay, that's a step.
Just okay.
And then that sense it's helpful, and it can be also detrimental because I can get stuck. What's pleasing to Krishna? Well, I'm not ready for doing what's pleasing to Krishna yet. I just don't want, like, you know, the bad quality of being disrespectful. Okay, step in the good direction. But is that pleasing to Krishna, people that are impersonal, as opposed to people that are, you know, disrespectful? Not really. Not pleasing to Krishna.
Thank you very much.
You know, that you could be relative scales of displeasing, but my goodness, you know, we're certainly advised against impersonalism. So what's needed is to go further, is a spiritual conception of self and a spiritual conception of Krishna, and self's business is pleasing Krishna. So you go there, and then you come, then from that neutrality thing, take a step in the direction of being respectful.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Ah.
I was thinking, can the identification, you talked about upadis.
Yes.
Can the identification of a particular type of devotional service be an upadi?
Do you have an idea, like an example in mind?
You know, if I identify with being a book distributor, or a pujari, or a temple president.
Well, it depends. I mean, certainly that's not our eternal spiritual identity. But, on the other hand, if one is assigned by spiritual authority to this service, then we identify with service, and we identify with the service that's given to us. In that sense, we identify. And then supposing, this is Prabhupada, supposing one is then assigned a different service, then one identifies with a different service. Mm-hmm. It's, you're, a devotee asked Prabhupada, is it okay to become attached to your service? I mean, your question isn't identical with that one, but Prabhupada's answer was yes. And then, if some other service is assigned by the spiritual master, then you let go of that thing that you're attached, that service you're attached to, and you become attached to the new one. So you're identifying with the service because it's coming in this descending fashion. So commonly we're not attached like that. Commonly our attachment is the, you know, different kind of attachment, or a designation that's a different kind than I was requested to do such and such, so that's my identity. I'm serving Krishna this way. You follow? Generally, it is material. But then we can take that and use the thorn to remove the thorn. Be attached to distributing books. But then if I'm disrespectful to others that aren't distributing books, I'm better than you are, because I've got the topmost service. That's detrimental.
And then sort of related to that, I was saying this morning, and the fifth canto, Rishabhadev was, I think it was in the chapter where he was preaching to his sons, and he said that one shouldn't be attached to the process of liberation. Does that apply to bhakti?
Yeah. Oh, no. Because the process of liberation is that what you want as the goal, because the process is to get to the goal, abhidhe is to get to the prayojana. Don't be attached to the concept that this is going to take me to liberation. Just be attached to the position of being a servant. And that's bhakti. So be attached to being in service to Krishna, which is the process of liberation, but ultimate liberation. Yeah? Yeah. Another one. Okay, you're over here.
Hare Krishna. Question is coming from the presentation you did on Hindu temple. You gave example of Chinese devotees, when they are in kirtan, they feel emotions.
Not everyone, but sometimes, yeah.
Yes, so, you know, sometime I have seen people when they are singing the national anthems, even then they are crying. Some people, you know, just listen some mundane song or, you know, whatever their emotional songs are, they cry.
Sure.
So, I mean, you know, just to know that, you know, they are just crying because of the music and emotion involved that, or they are just crying for the holy name, you know. I mean, some of the tunes may be giving more emotions than other tunes. How do I know it is, you know, spiritual emotions or it is just my musical emotions?
That was like 4th of July fireworks. That was. He wanted to give you the microphone. In practical terms, we can assume a couple of things. When we're experiencing, or the Chinese people, example, are experiencing, it's a mix. Because they're not in pure consciousness. We're not in pure consciousness. So it's a mix, material, spiritual. We can also assume that someone by national anthem or some music, there's not at all spiritual. It's the modes of nature acting on the mind. And something moves the modes of nature, move the mind over there and then crying. And some people are more inclined to cry and some people less inclined to cry. But then there's this third thing that, so, specific to the example of that you're referring to from the other day, Chinese people, they don't have any identification at all. National anthem or music or something like that, they don't have any identification, they don't know what's what. And the melody is very simple. So it wasn't the musicality so much, but the name. So certainly, it's a myth. Certainly there's a spiritual element when something they're totally unfamiliar with moves something inside. And it's a spiritual emotion. Mixed. It may not happen again. But still it's a spiritual emotion. Mixed. Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, you were speaking about experiences that feel painful at the level of the false ego. But a devotee trusts that, you know, this is Krishna's mercy. So it seems like this ability is like, you know, exercising a muscle. And the more you exercise making the right choices, it strengthens over time.
Yes.
So I feel, you know, when I compare to my early years in Krishna consciousness, some relief from, you know, or some improvement in this area. And yet, I would really like to understand, what is that anchor we can hold on to when the ego is hurting, and yet we want to make the choice of, you know, service to the lotus feet of the spiritual master? How to not get swept up by the material modes?
Well, nice question. It was recently asked that same question. The words were different, but the same question. And say it in different language, the reply can be just stay focused on the intention of our founder Acharya, and with that the intention of those who are carrying out the intention of our founder Acharya, stay focused there. Now, the strong wind can blow one this way, or you know, a tide can move one that way, but that's the anchor. Or another way of saying the same is love. It's an anchor. But the love means I'm interested in what's important to the beloved. So another way of saying the same thing. What's the intention? We're all part of this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And it's resting upon our founder Acharya. Of course, his intention is resting upon the previous Acharyas, but we can certainly meditate on and appreciate and so forth. But he's our founder Acharya. So what was his intention with things that he did and said and wanted? What was his intention? And stay, that's the shelter, that's the anchor. As time and tide and wind and storm and everything moves around, Kali Yuga starts to swirl, what keeps us, that the anchor, the focus, the shelter is our founder Acharya and what he wanted. We just keep taking shelter there, going there, striving to fulfill that in a mood of cooperation with others. Similarly, sheltered. Okay. Yeah. I was waiting.
Guru Maharaj, so King Raghavana has realized after Jadapara spoken to him, you know, what, you know, it's a, I'm deceased and all that, nicely this verse explains. So whatever he did, the act before, he expressed sorry, but whatever he did, the act before to Jadapara is been forgiven, or when he, after realizing it's been nullified, or what is the position of that act?
If I'm understanding, let me say back what I think your question is. Previously, King Rahugana offended.
Mm.
And now he's heard from Judd Bharat. You want to know, has the responsibility for those offenses now been nullified?
Mm. Yes, sir.
Well, there's nothing explicit in the verses or the commentary to say one way or the other. Yes or no. We don't know. It's not explicit. Implicit is the nature of Judd Bharat and, you know, the facts that he's Judd Bharat speaking to the king. He didn't say beans to those guys that wanted to chop him. You know, Goddess Durga took care of them. But other things, his brothers and so forth, of going back, what about them? Well, for sure, we know less about them, but the fact that Judd Barrett chose to speak to Rahugana, and Rahugana's light went on, and that, you know, that he's in a mood of humility. We haven't heard him say, please accept my apology, and Judd Barrett say yes, we can assume. Implied. And so implied is yes, but we don't know for sure. You know, because it does take the explicit request and the explicit forgiveness. We can, it's implied by the exchange and the nature of both parties.
Thank you.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai.